And just because society right now is catered toward neurodivergent expression by everything being online does not mean that this is evolutionary. It just means it's control.
Welcome to Herding Cats and Other Stories from the Genesis of the Neurodiversity Movement with hosts Oslin, Marenike, Kasiana, and Renee.
Hi, everyone. We're Foundations for Divergent Minds. I'm Osman Latimer. I'm the executive director of FDM.
I'm Marenike Onawu. I'm the, a board member. I do research and advocacy and all that jazz.
I'm Kasiana Asasamas. I certainly have a title.
And I'm Renee Martin. I've managed to miss all the rest of these, and I believe my official title is outreach director.
I'm so professional.
Totally. We're not, it's a podcast. We're not supposed to be professional. We're supposed to be
That's true.
Allowing people to make parasocial relationships with us.
Yep. Okay, now I'm going to say something real controversial. Diversity, equity, and inclusion, and I will not call it DEI. I'm going to say the whole thing every single time because you sound like an asshat when you say that you're against diversity, equity, and inclusion. DEI, like saying it that way, lets you obfuscate that. But no, diversity, equity, and inclusion is a lot more people than everybody thinks it is. And I'm going to keep pointing that out every single time.
People are, because we're talking about class, we're talking about race, we're talking about gender, we're talking about
veteran status, disability, age, oh, so many things, geographic right. location.
Veterans.
Yes.
Veterans benefit.
For the record, the Veteran Forum on Reddit had a whole ass shit show when they discovered that included veterans thing. I want you guys.
It just really makes me sad that people, I don't know. I don't say it was the first or the second podcast when we were talking about. Is it just that people don't have this understanding? I think that there's so much information everywhere. People don't really know anything. But I am still saddened by the amount of people who don't realize that veterans were a key part, you know, like they're thinking, oh, it just means black and brown people and trans folks.
Right.
No, it means pretty much everyone.
Right. Right. If you're not a cis, white, middle class or higher, able-bodied, neurotypical dude, it meant you.
Oh.
And even that dude, when he gets older, it means you
right.
too because of ageism.
Right. Right. Okay, so middle class, middle age. So, yeah, but yeah, once you're over 50, it meant you too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like that, it's the majority of humans. It's just the majority of humans.
But yeah, but it was such a horrible thing to have. And you're like, guys, like, no.
And see, this is the other part of it, is the other side of it, is the people who are not that. That are in the progressive spaces. They're people that don't understand that they're the norm, and
right.
they're not the DEI unless they happen to have like a specific. Like majority of the people in that space are able to act adjacent to the normativity. And so they didn't understand that literally everyone else was DEI.
Right.
And so because of that, they have missed like the mark in trying to understand like how to do DEI. They think that it's just like helping people to realize that everyone needs to be on the same page, not thinking about the fact that the same page looks different for each different group, each different subtopic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly. And you have to make sure we have even the same book to be much less the same page.
Right. And they're not. They're just not. And that's why DEI initiatives didn't do a whole lot for the majority of us. Because the people acting it out were the people that were the closest to norm.
Right. Because DEI always needed to be more than just hire your token, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't.
And then let's also talk about the fact that it came out of guilt. You know what I mean? That was, you know, it's something that the community had been crying for years. And it was only because people felt they had to. So it was, it came after all their, you know, fake diversity statements. Then came all the funding for DEI, which is now, you know, miraculously dried up.
Mm-hmm. My local airport is having a thing about, they're having a special session to talk about repealing those things. I was like, do not dare. Mm-mm. But I think that they are getting approximately 1 million comments. But we are talking about autistic history. Everything is connected, y'all. This is called intersectionality. All the oppressions intersect.
You know, to tie this back into to history, I see, and this is ABA side of things, but BTBAs are all upset that the BACB dialed back their DEI things because the state told them to. I'm like, y'all, you're compliant. That's all y'all are.
All you do is, oh my gosh, did you see that Lemos's history came out?
No.
You need to be more specific. Oh,
tell us more.
Oh, Lovas was in the Hitler Youth.
Oh, so it's confirmed now. Yeah. I know they just said that it was suspected, but now they know for sure.
Yeah.
Wow.
I am so completely shocked.
Is that sarcasm?
Yes.
I can't tell.
Sorry, sarcasm, don't sarcasm.
Okay, yeah. It came out, and I'm trying to find the link. And the things that I need to search to find the link are really stunning. Here we go. The things I needed to search included in one of my channels. Lovas was a bleeping Nazi youth. Yes, in the LA Review of Books. And the article is called The Man Who Believed He Could Have Raised Hitler to Be a Nice Person. And then it goes into how he totally was in fact in the Hitler Youth. And so is his dad.
Wow.
So that's exciting.
I'm not surprised.
And unsurprising.
I'm not surprised at all. Because I was looking that up because I was trying to explain to somebody in the autistic researcher group this week that we can't, because they were saying, oh, I'm more like BIPOC people because I do these things and BIPOC cultures do these things and yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, I wouldn't be disabled in a different culture. It's just that whites are mutations or something like that.
Excuse me?
I hope it's the only white person in the room. You guys can hear my face.
Renee,
it was very loud.
It's so real. Renee keeps it real like nobody's business.
I hope y'all can hear my face at that one.
And I'm like, look, we have to understand that both were all things pathologized because they weren't white centric. And because they were centric, we have to then look at like how behaviorism then was developed, because behaviorism was developed adjacent to eugenics, both in the U.S. and in Germany and in the Netherlands and all over Europe. Like, they were happening in concert, and then those people came across the pond and came here as well. Like, come on, people.
It's pathologized, but also a lot of the time when you see that from white people, it's like, sir, ma'am, or captain, that absolutely would not have flown with my family either. Please stop. I don't know what you think you're doing there, but I'm cringing so hard it hurts.
No. And I think what they mean to say is that some of the, you know, socially constructed norms, because of, you know, that being neurodivergent, they feel like they're, you know, these are unimportant, and that, you know, like people of the global majority also have their own, you know, so I understand the intention behind it, but it's just such a minimizing statement.
Mm-hmm. It's so cringy.
It boggles me. It's also making me think about, so like we can now talk about it, but we're FDM is part of this project with Drexel to start helping have autistic voices be centered in the priorities within ABA research. And I posted about it in these different groups, and I got some
And you
backlash,
got attacked,
obviously.
right?
Yeah, of course I did. But like people were saying, hey, this would be banned like conversion therapy was. And I'm curious on what how they think that people got conversion therapy banned. Because it wasn't by just continuing to yell at people, it was by doing research that like had gay people be the ones to guide the research priorities. How else are we going to do that except if we start helping to guide the research priorities by being included as full members of a research team? Like, I don't know how else you do that. Also, the parallel, because they were both the same thing. They were both developing the same, they were just two different programs in the same life with the same people.
And especially with we need to especially with the way the systems are being dismantled right now, we really can't start un We need to do it your way and not the other ways, because like parents need help. And unfortunately, ABA being the only available help for so many people, we can't just say toss it all in the bin and then leave parents with literally nothing. Like
Exactly.
daycares won't take a lot of these kids that are
Exactly.
non-speaking. Like there's literally no other option. Like what do you
Yeah.
want people to do?
It's not like people are like, yay, this is, it's like, this is what I've got. This is what I'm working with, right? I am, I'm a parent. I'm all in for my kid. This is what is here. And you're telling me, no, I reject that. Don't do that. But I have nothing to replace it for. I have no, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, if your child wanders into the pond and is the next person drown and next hashtag, so that's sad for you. If they beat your child or prone restrain them and they suffocate, oh well, you know what I mean? Like, sorry, because that wasn't, you know what I mean? You should have, I don't know, had, an infinity symbol and rainbows and, like, come on now. Like, real life is here right now.
And as they're actively reducing protections for like 504s and IEPs, and as they're actively reducing all of the disability DEI, everything, it's going to be even more necessary to make sure that kids have any kind of help and protection and training. Like,
I mean,
what do you do?
exactly.
That's why we
What do you do?
have,
You
this is
fix
why,
the ABA providers.
I mean, like, we've got that, and we've got it for the other people, and now we're working on it. I got a teacher hired this week for our Dallas Foundation grant that is helping to create a course for teachers in Texas specifically. Like, it is meant to, like, align to teaks in that way, because, like my daughter's long-term sub that was her case manager is no longer at the school, and I don't even know if she has a case manager at the school right now. That's how serious the staffing shortages are. They're fighting me on speech for her IEP, in her IEP, despite her very clear speech disability. And so we have to have things that can help people right now. So we're trying to get this really something that can be done quickly, that people can learn really quickly, and we're using like completely different techniques to be doing the teaching, because we're going with best practices from corporate environments to help people learn their systems quickly. We're doing that with this, and because we need something to help teachers right now that's not ABA, that's something else. But we also have the things for BCBA so that they're also learning something else, because everyone needs to learn something else really quickly, because there's not staff, there's not budget, there's not funding coming to us, and everything is being stripped away.
This literally just popped in my head. Might not be the best place to end the podcast, but what have we ever thought about doing something like a parent ABA empowerment thing where we say, you can teach your kids some of the tricks and how to like not be emotionally manipulated by it. You can tell an ABA provider their tablet is not bait. They're going to keep their tablet. Do not use it as bait. Their teddy bear is not bait. Like teach parents like how to work with the ABA system too.
I mean, I think that would be a great idea. We need staff. So we need funding.
Right, right.
Because
that's brilliant.
Anymore.
It's
that's a
brilliant
podcast conversation, I think.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That popped in my head. That would be a great idea.
It would. It would empower people. It would give them the tools that they want, because people are feeling like, okay, if I'm doing this, I'm doing this thing that I'm concerned is going to harm my child. I don't want to do that, but I don't want to leave my child without options. So this is a way of giving people, you know, like a sense of control and some autonomy over things, you know, in their own lives and that of their children.
Right. So if this stays in the podcast, guys, give us some funding. That's what we want to work on too.
That's what we need is funding.
Yes, we need funding, y'all.
To get funding and training, can we just talk about how much hot BS it is that, like, people are like, oh, cop training? Like, right. The cops do not care. And in the current environment where, you know, eugenic rhetoric has been built back up, they have always thought they were doing our parents a favor when they killed us. And that has just been dialed right back up to 11.
Mm-hmm. Why do we think this murder happened this past weekend?
I mean, because cops don't care. They saw somebody as an excuse to shoot. I said what I said.
I stand by this statement.
I would say it again.
Yeah.
Cops are trigger happy. You don't get into, you don't stay in the police force because you want to help people.
Mm-mm.
I don't know. Maybe a few people got into the police force because they wanted to help people, but nobody stays in the police force to help people.
And you can't tell me they thought it was a gun because, like, you're holding a gun. You train with guns. You have one on your waist. You know what one looks like. You're not freaking confused.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're shot because you know you're immune. Like.
Mm-hmm.
This is family. I'm going to start pivoting us into the ASPE supremacy side because.
Okay. Go for it.
Because.
Please.
The more I think about this and the more we're talking about all these things, because we all know these things because they are our lives and there are things that we have to worry and think about on the regular.
Right.
That what I see out of current community is very, very disconnected from this reality. The people that have platforms that are using platforms right now, Lyric over at Neurodivergent Rebel was somebody that yesterday posted the tweet was or whatever. RFK just said autism destroys families and children and says autistic children are kids that will never pay taxes, hold a job, play baseball, write a poem, go out on a date. Many will never use a toilet unassisted. He also said we are doing this to our children and we need to put it to an end. And their response to that was, this erases all of the autistic people who can do these things. And it's like, no, it does not erase.
They lost the whole point. Screw whether we can do all those things or if we can't. We're a human. It's a human being, period. Whether we do those things or not, you're worthy of value. You're worthy of the services, the accommodation that you need, the supports that you need. That stuff is irrelevant. That's why we can't get anywhere.
But I need to put the undertone to it. I need to put the undertone to it that this is ASPE supremacy. That kind of
it
thinking
sure
is ASPE supremacy.
It absolutely is. And that was how the whole Asperger's Nazi nonsense started with, you know, in World War II that we're trying to actively avoid turning into again was Asperger's deciding that those that met those qualifications were worth saving. And those that did not were not.
They were house slaves instead of field ones.
Right. Mm. Right. Or, you know, fed to chambers, like, or experimented on, or all of the other horrible things that happened.
And, like, that's
the correct response.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
The correct response isn't, I can do all those things. I'm, you know, worthwhile and a person. The correct response is to look them dead in the eye and say, so what? And if you can manage it, poop on the floor. I'm in a mood.
That's how they trick us into this. And so thinking about Lyric being somebody who had to flee Texas because of all of the bigotry here and stuff like that, like, I think it's more about they keep you on your toes, like, with, it's like a game of whack-a-mole. to where they're like, no, some of us can do that. You know, so it's to distract from the fact that whether we could do that or not, we deserve respect and services anyway. But it's to keep us, it's this game of keeping us dancing. Like, again, like the DEI thing, like you were saying, Cassiana, no one wants to say that it's divert. I'm against diversity, equity, and inclusion, because that sounds ridiculous, just even coming out of someone's mouth. You know what I mean? What part are you against? The equity, the diversity, the inclusion? Like, what is so evil about those things? So people use buzzwords. And so it's the same thing. They get people to try to, they trip us up saying what we can and can't do, jumping through their hoops when that shouldn't even matter.
And then we have to link this to the fact that Musk is at the top of the stage. And this rhetoric is what will be used to help justify, quote unquote, saving us. Because the other people at the top, the other people that are involved here, are the same people that have been the AFSB supremacists online since the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We really want our children to aspire to be the next Elon Musk. Yeah, like that's a goal. Yeah. Ugh.
And like all the online people, like, they're all the same people that we've been dealing with for years. All these that we are talking about are the people that we have literally been trying to stand up against for years. And it was only because of the last few years that people have suddenly found neurodiversity. And the way that they're speaking neurodiversity is in this AFSB rhetoric.
Yes, that's my concern, is that people have conflated this AFSB supremacy. Only people with minimal support needs are valuable to being what neurodiversity is, when that's not what neurodiversity is at all.
That is never what neurodiversity has been. Like, it sounded like I can see how somebody could have gotten that erroneous idea. I was around. I can see how somebody could have gotten that erroneous idea, because that was who you heard from. But I maintain that it was never the intention.
Right.
This comes out of, like, the autistic union people, and I know I'm going to get a flack for saying it out loud.
Yes, like, the pointy uppies.
The pointy uppies. And the pointy uppies are, we see pointy uppies all over the internet now. They're everywhere, and they don't realize that that is inherently tied to AFSB supremacy. These are people that were involved with AFSB for Freedom.
Mm-hmm. I remember that page.
Me too. Because I'm old. Like, and we've been around for too long.
Yes. But this is how we talk about it in history terms. Because, like, these are things that are real. And these are people that come from places and come from ideologies that do not align to seeing everyone with personhood. That's why we had that whole conversation in, like, the first or second episode about, like, the AFSB supremacy at Autism Society. This is how last month we have the same conversation about RFK that we're having today. This is just our history, and it's just repeated.
It is. Yep.
But it's also the same history that repeated back in the 1930s and 1940s. Because all these lineages they're part of the same lineages. Every single one of them. You cannot untie the fact that RFK Jr. comes out of the family that lobotomized one of their kids.
You sure can't.
Like, you can't untie AFSB supremacy from Asperger's and what happened to so many people. You can't untie that from the ABA.
Right.
AFSB supremacy makes me so mad. Get over yourself.
What? Because
get over yourself.
Because you could speak before you turn three. Because you could speak before you turn.
Like, okay, I read a thing like back when I was in my obsessed with autism phase in like the very early 2000s that. And this is very firmly in the 2004, in the DSM-4, before the DSM-5 with a twinkle in whoever it was's eye, that postulated that Asperger syndrome did not exist. It was all autism. that the distinction that was written into the DSM-IV did not exist, and it's like lived rent free in my head since 2002. Because it's true.
I mean, this is why DSM-5 consolidated them, because that's also what the research said. As much as people want to say that they got rid of Asperger's because he was tied to Nazi Germany, no.
Yeah, no. It's the equivalent of how, post slavery, they used to have, okay, there's the mulatto, the octoroon, the quadroon, the griffe. They were like, no, they're just all black. Some are lighter, some are darker. You know what I mean? Like, it's basically you took, the five conditions, that were supposedly the different shades of autism, to return two of them to the quote unquote medical side and had the three and then merged the three into one. They were already all in one category anyway, as what was called pervasive developmental disorder. That was the umbrella category anyway. These were just their individual little names. It's kind of like North America, the continent of North America has Canada, Mexico, and the United States. You know what I mean? So the continent never changed. They just stopped referring to them individually by their countries, so to speak.
Right.
Because they were inaccurate boundaries, and borders for those countries.
Because white people like to categorize things.
Okay, like, I also like to categorize things.
But don't you dare call me anything but, exactly what I want to be called. Or, yeah.
My child has PDD and OS. My child has Asperger's. I only doctor shop to like four different psychiatrists till I can pay one to, put that on the paper. But yeah.
Right. Exactly.
How dare you call them white? They are like quarter German, quarter English, quarter Scottish, quarter French. And
yeah, which all happen to be white. But yeah.
I need another one, even though
quarter
I've
this, quarter that, dollar yeah. white. Yeah.
Yeah. As your token white person, I give you permission to offer to send them back to their countries and their constituent parts when they tell you to do that.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
You can fill that recap.
I will. Yeah, I will.
Okay. Please do. It'll be hilarious.
And y'all know Renee will too.
Yeah, I do.
It's not even a joke. Yes.
I absolutely will. Timing.
But
I love you.
I think what upsets me though is that I know I've been trying to point out the Aspie supremacy within the rhetoric for a while. I know I've been trying to point it out for years. And it's this is why it matters. This right now, this point, this is why that has mattered all this time. And like, I couldn't say it in that way because then I would be called hyperbolic.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, it's what has given a lot of strength to the profound autism movement is the Aspie supremacy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It allows those divisions to happen. And then because there is actual Aspie supremacy that is like overt and all that out there too, that is also feeding in with the same rhetoric that we are okay, but those people are not.
Oh, it's just like our minds are fine.
Right. We're the next step of evolution bullshit.
Okay, evolution does not work that way. Can I just go off about that for a minute?
Yes.
Evolution is not goal-directed. Evolution is stochastic, which is a great word for random that I learned in my actual evolution class. Evolution happens entirely on accident. You have a mutation. It just kind of happens and whoopsie doodle, it is more adapted to the current environment than whatever is currently going on there. Or, maybe you just happen to pass it on because you got lucky and I did not mean for that pun, but we're just going to go with it.
Exactly. It's not about the inherent worth or value of that.
Yeah, no. Evolution is called...
Can I say something that's going to be possibly controversial, not in this group, but in general?
Yes.
Okay. And just because society right now is catered toward neurodivergent expression by everything being online does not mean that this is evolutionary. It just means it's control. Like, you can't disconnect the fact that the people that are at the top are all neurodivergent on that techie side, and they've decided that they get to be assholes, and they get to write the algorithms, and they get to decide what the algorithms
do. That is true.
Too.
And, that is very true.
And so this is just control. And so this is not evolution. If you recognize yourself in these kinds of societal moments right now, that's not evolution. That's just about who is currently, like, in the position of leadership in our pumped up world. Anyways, continue with evolution.
Yeah, just the whole next step of evolution thing is I'm gonna every single time say no, because evolution is not goal directed, it is random. And it does not have steps. It is very slow and it doesn't work that way. Like, that indicates. So here we go. Now here's my turn to controversial, though probably not here, and less controversial among statistic circles than some other circles. Suggesting it has steps and we are the next step and is guided is the same as saying there is a creator guiding it, and no.
Right.
If there was a creator guiding it, we would not have knees the way we have knees, okay?
Knees are pretty awkward. Yeah.
Knees are proof against an intelligent designer who's actually doing anything.
I always thought the sewer between the playgrounds was the proof that the playground between the sewers was proof that it wasn't intelligently designed.
The playground between what?
The sewers was proof that it wasn't intelligently designed.
Which one's that?
It's a sex joke. The playground is between the sewers.
Oh, yes. Yes, I see what you did there.
I always thought that was proof against intelligent design myself.
I mean, it's funny. But knees, I can say anywhere. And knees are
that's
the
true. Well, I actually had the table jump out and bite my knee and bruise it pretty bad the other day. So I'm kind of anti-knee this week. So.
Yesterday I had Aikido class and we were doing a thing that is traditionally done. Like, you do this whole weapon kata kneeling traditionally. Mm-hmm. But there was exactly one good knee in the room, so we did not. We did it standing. My left knee was the one good knee in the room.
You still have good knees. I'm impressed.
No, just one.
Any at all?
I mean, I've had arthritis in both my knees since I was 24. But that's because I have an inward toe on both of my feet. So, like that,
yeah.
I never learned to walk neurotypically.
Yeah. But just my point is, we are not the next step in evolution, because evolution doesn't work that way. And you're wrong about evolution if you think it works in steps.
And then also, it's not a superpower. It's not a superpower. It's not a superpower. It's not a superpower.
Thanks for listening to Herding Cats. If you like what you hear, please like and subscribe. It really helps us grow our community with your help.